What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Sri Vatsa? People may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. Bhagavatam literally means the pastimes of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. For example, there are pastimes of Lord Krishna and narrations of devotees like Prahlad, Dhruva, and Maharaja Ambarish. Both pastimes pertain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because the devotees' pastimes are in relation with Him. The Mahabharata, for example, the history of the Pandavas and their activities is sacred because the Pandavas have a direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. Ayesham punya shlokanam udam ayesham satam upasratya bhavinoda srivatsanka sikim puna. What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Sri Vatsa? People may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. Om Agyanita Parandasya Jnanangana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manumbhistam Shapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gudamayam Dadati Svam Vatandikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadada Sri Shastra Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of God is coming down as the first born incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented powers, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master. So this is the title and chapter, the chapter and title, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha. And Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. So here it explains that what to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Sri Vatsa, people may take transcendental pleasure, even in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. So everyone likes to hear. Hearing is the thing which distinguishes us from the animals. The animals can't hear. If you talk with an animal, then his hearing capacity is very limited. So animal life means lack of hearing. The difference between a human and an animal is in the ability to hear. Because the other functions of the body, the animals are far more advanced. They're advanced, they have bigger bodies, more violent bodies, they are better at sex life, they're better at eating, they're better at sleeping, they're better at all sorts of things. They have big noses, big mouths, big genitals, big ears, isn't it? An elephant has huge ears. But he can't hear one single verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Big, big ears flapping in the wind. But at the same time, he has not got the ability to hear anything about God. So the distinction between animal life and human life is based on this principle of hearing. If a human being does not hear about the glorious message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then his whole life is uselessly wasted. It's completely wasted. Because within this three-dimensional atmosphere, within the material world, we are all in a limited situation. And our hearing is simply based upon the false conception of the body. Everyone is very attached to the body. And this attachment to our bodies makes us also very eager to hear things related to the body. We always want to hear things related to the body. Just like we see that in the newspapers, they're always trying to put in something wonderful, something extraordinary to do with the body. Usually, the extraordinary thing with the body is when it dies in a violent way. People like that very much. Sometimes they like to read how the head was chopped off from the body. So that's something extraordinary. A head on the body is very ordinary. Wherever you go, you'll see heads stuck on bodies. So when there's a head off a body, then we want to hear about it, isn't it? Just like if you walked out the door and there was a head lying on the ground. So you'd want to tell everyone, hey, look, I found a head. Isn't it? It becomes something interesting. But if you find someone with a head on a body, you don't come running back and say, hey, I just saw a head on a body. Isn't it? So your attraction is something extraordinary. We're not so much attracted because in the material world, familiarity breeds contempt. We are contempted by the material world. So all the familiar things, they have no more juice. Just like the sugar cane, we want to squeeze out some juice. But when the juice is dry, when we sufficiently dry the sugar cane, there's only some dry bamboo-like type stuff. There's no more juice. So in the material world, we become familiar. And because it is very limited, it breeds contempt. It's contemptible. Just like we're not going to write a whole book about a postman. Oh, best-selling novel of the 90s about Postman Pat. For children, maybe, they're attracted to Postman Pat. But for adults, the idea of some boring activity, getting up in the morning, getting his bag of letters, going down this street, that street, up and down, putting him in the thing. How much can you go on and on talking about such an activity until one becomes completely bored to tears? So in the material world, actually everything is very boring. Very boring. So people try to imagine so many variegatedness. They try to write so many extraordinary books. Sometimes they write about a spacecraft that went to Neptune or Jupiter. There was some big battle. Now the latest movie is about some spacecraft that went to Jupiter. So something extraordinary. They want always something extraordinary. And when we want to be attractive to other people, we want to tell them something extraordinary, isn't it? Something really special. Something really special. So that special thing means it should be something extraordinary. So this ordinary and extraordinary, they are natural inclination. Because if you study in the animal kingdom, there is nothing extraordinary. Is it? Nothing extraordinary going on. Amongst the animals, they get up, they eat a bit, chew on a piece of grass, chase after a female species and go to sleep. Basically all they do. There's nothing very extraordinary going on. For us it might be extraordinary to look at their activities because they have a different body. Just like we may look at the lion thinking, oh, very exciting. But the lion looks bored stiff. He doesn't look like he's very excited about anything. He yawns now and again. And then every now and again may see something edible, so he'll send his wife out to get it. So he lies there, lazy in the sun. And we see that generally speaking, the nature of the material world is that it's very, very boring. Very, very ordinary. Because it is a limited realm. In the material world, the tiny jivas, insignificant infinitesimal jivas, are very, very boring because they're very tiny. Something which is very weak is boring, isn't it? Just like when you were at school, the weakest guy was always the most boring. The guy who had no opulences. So they're always the most boring character at school. Usually had thick glasses. He couldn't run. Wasn't very good at doing this, wasn't very good at doing that. So you generally find he was the reject in the class. People make fun of him. didn't they? There was that one guy that got all the fun taken out of him, what they call it, taking the mickey or whatever. So that's because the living entity is disgusted by inability, inefficiency, deficiency. We're actually disgusted by it because actually we can understand that something which is potent, it has potency. And something which is impotent has no potency. So therefore, we can also understand in sound. Sound has potency. Sound actually is very powerful. It's a very powerful thing. It's the subtlest thing. Just like earth, water, fire, air, ether. Within the ether is sound. So next to mind, sound is the most subtlest material element. Very, very subtle. Prabhupada said almost spiritual. It's so subtle in its potency. So sound is very, very powerful energy of the Supreme Lord. And through sound, this sound, because if you notice, in the animal species, sound is not very developed. It's not very developed amongst the animals. So the speaking communication is not there. Whereas in the humans, they have mobile phones. Wouldn't it be funny if animals had mobile phones? Hey, listen, Daisy, I found some really good grass over here. Come on over, quick. All these cows start jumping over fences. So there's no power of communication because the subtle energy is not developed enough. So if we study it, we'll find there's gross energy and subtle energy. And gross energy is very dead, inanimate. It doesn't have initiative. So that potency of initiative comes from spiritual energy. Initiative. As Krishna says, I am the ability in man. I am that initiative. God gives initiative. As Krishna says, I am situated in the heart and I am giving them direction. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So therefore, knowledge is given by sound. Try and understand this. God is revealing himself to you through sound. That is the difference between the animal kingdom and the spiritual kingdom. All based in sound. So if you do not catch this transcendental sound, you remain an animal. You remain an animal. You cannot get out of the animal kingdom without transcendental sound. Krishna says, I am in the heart, I am giving direction. That direction is in Shabda Brahman. Shabda means Brahman and sound. Shabda means sound. God has appeared to the humans in transcendental sound. So this sound is coming from the absolute plane down to the relative plane. In the relative plane, what we call relativity means mundane relativity. But there is also absolute relativity. There is mundane relativity, but there's absolute relativity. Which relativity are you in? Mundane. So get into the spiritual relativity. In the mundane relativity, everything is related to the material atmosphere. This is the interreaction between the 24 elements, just like this interreaction, just like our body is an interreaction of certain chemicals and mixture. So the sounds of the material world are all related to matter, and therefore they further implicate us in the complexities of mundane consciousness. That's why it's very, very important how you associate with sound in the material world. Up until this point, you have been associating with sound because from the moment you're born, first thing is sound. Immediately sound is there, and then as we grow up, sound develops. The sound of the little child is underdeveloped. So they make a noise. There's nothing substance, because their consciousness is very low, very, underdeveloped. As they develop through the years, their sound becomes more and more potent. They become more and more extended in the scope of sound according to their association. So they're educated through the medium of sound. And this sound is there in a very sophisticated manner in modern civilization. But it can only bring one to the point of further and further implicating our consciousness in mundane identification. So this material sound is very, very dangerous. We should be very wary of mundane sound, because mundane sound solidifies the material concept of life. Just like people are all the time talking. And this talking reveals their inner mind. We watch the news or hear the radio, you can hear people speak and talk. It's all bodily related. Just like in Ireland, they're always talking about the weather. Isn't it, Ravi? They're always talking about the weather. Wherever you meet them, isn't it? What do they talk about? The weather. Because it's bodily related. Bodily related. So that bodily relationship means they're too much engrossed. And therefore they want to think, oh, will it be sunny today? What does it matter whether it's sunny today? What does it matter? Because then I can enjoy a little bit more than I did yesterday. Yesterday wasn't sunny, so today might be sunny. So today I'm going to get a little bit extra pleasure. I can go down and have my Guinness. I'll get hot and then I'll need a drink of Guinness. So this is their dream. So their mind is very limited. So therefore limited things are going on in conversation, in discussion. So people are not very attracted to anything which is beyond, just like we see. How many people are interested in real philosophy? Not many, because it's too complicated for their mind. How can I relate to that? You see? So therefore, it is the business of the Vaishnava to become trained in sound. Our training is in sound. We are the servants of sound. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is manifested in sound. We cannot approach God by our smelling. Did anyone smell God? Did anyone smell God here? Or touch God? Did anyone touch God? Did anyone see God? Did anyone taste God? But you can hear God. Because the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This hearing of the names of God is association with God through sound. But as Lord Chaitanya says, unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. I have no attraction to develop higher attachment to transcendental sound. But actually, Krishna consciousness is training in sound. Not just training in chanting, but also chanting in hearing. Hearing about the wonderful pastime of Urukrama. Urukrama means one who performs extraordinary activities. Extraordinary activities. Now, as one philosopher pointed out, as soon as God is extraordinary, we doubt. Because we can only believe in the ordinary. We can have only faith in the ordinary thing. We can't have faith in the extraordinary because it's extraordinary. It would require extraordinary ability to have faith in it. You understand? In other words, just like if you listen to two scientists talk about molecular structure, unless you are educated in that sound, you will be bewildered. You will lose interest. You will become either doubtful or bewildered. In any sound which is very, very sophisticated, then one, even in the material world, becomes disillusioned in some way. Or one may be fascinated there to try and understand it. But in the material world, unless we're trained in sound, so this training means we are trained up in various types of knowledge. knowledge of the material world is also, in many ways, very sophisticated, because there are different extraordinary aspects of material nature. So generally people are attracted by the extraordinary sciences. Extraordinary people are attracted by extraordinary things. Ordinary people are only attracted by ordinary things. You understand? So therefore, it is not ordinary to be attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is extraordinary. And it requires extraordinary endeavor, not ordinary endeavor. If we give it ordinary endeavor, we will not be able to enter into the transcendental realizations of that sound. It is not just simply some, mundane exercise, as one would read about Henry VIII or Charles I. It is not simply a matter of actually browsing or inspecting or somehow bringing some sort of information into our service. Transcendental sound requires extraordinary qualification. What is that qualification? Krishna says, Tadviri paripattena paripashena sevaya. Tadviri paripattena. That one has to, Krishna says, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. So the first thing is one must approach someone who is extraordinary. The transcendental guru, the spiritual master, who is, what is he? He has tattva jnana. There it says jnana darshan, tattva darshan, that he has darshan of the truth. So to have darshan of the truth is very, very rare in this world. Very, very rare. So therefore, tadviri paripattena, that once you try to learn through by approaching the spiritual master, one should inquire submissively. Submission means actually to understand transcendental knowledge means complete submission. There is no actual room for hanging on to our material mundane speculation. It is a state of, like Prabhupada says, one has to be like the blackboard. Completely ready for the spiritual master. Actually, you have to, the word paripatena can be better described that you have to wipe clean everything you've heard in your life. You have to get rid of all the dirty things that you've heard, because everything you've heard up until now is related to your body. It's related to the mundane concept of life. So therefore, one has to free himself from all the previous contaminated association. So that is a state of surrender. Here it says here, Tanasasusamananamarasyangalavarnitam yashavatara bhutanam shemayacha babayacha apanasmit. Apana samsritim goram yana vivishogranam tata sadyo vimuchyate yadveti sayambhavam yapara samsrayasita munayas prasamanaya sadya punan tupasritya svaranyapu nisheshvaya. O Sri Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, acharyas, who one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is fear by fear personified. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? The prophet said the age of Kali is the most condemned age, due to its quarrelsome features, Kali Yuga is saturated with vicious habits. And there is a great fight at the slightest misunderstanding. Those who are engaged in pure devotional service of the Lord, who are without any desire for self, is that we have to be free from the effects of prudent actions and dry philosophical speculations. Those are the two things which hinder, very detrimental for receiving transcendental sound. Normally this attachment to prudent activities, everyone in the material world is attached to hearing about something fruitful, something that will give you fruit, isn't it? We're all looking for fruit. So therefore, we are fruitive workers. So all of the sound that we are hearing in the material world, it's all different types of fruitive activities. Just like people are very attracted to these movie stars or film stars or some sort of politician or some sort of celebrity of some kind. But it's all fruitive activities. These people are all acting on the fruitive action, lusty activity. So therefore, by hearing about them, one becomes automatically lusty. Because by bad association. So in Kali Yuga, there are so many illicit activities going on. People like to learn about the pop groups, rock bands, how they're getting intoxicated, how they're having illicit sex, this thing, that thing. There are people hearing about the politicians, hearing about this thing, that thing. So many different types of hearing. For all of these types of hearing in the material world are different types of fruitive activities or dry philosophical speculations. That there are different types of speculative philosophies, different ideas, just like communism, humanitarianism, socialism, so many different types of speculations, billions and billions of speculations in the material world. But all of these types of things are a disqualification for actually making any advancement. So those who are freed from the effects of fruitive actions and dry philosophical speculations are capable of getting out of the estrangements of this complicated age. The leaders of the people are very much anxious to live in peace and friendship, but they have no information of the simple method of hearing the glories of the Lord. On the contrary, such leaders are opposed to the propagation of the glories of the Lord. In other words, the foolish leaders want to completely deny the existence of the Lord in the name of a secular state. Such leaders are enacting various plans every year. But by the insurmountable intricacies of the material energy of the Lord, all these plans for progress are being constantly frustrated. They have no eyes to see that their attempts at peace and friendship are failing. But here is the hint to get over this hurdle. If we want actual peace, we must open the road to understanding of the Supreme Lord Krishna and glorify Him for His various activities as they are depicted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely important because this is the way by which the infinitesimal, very, very tiny living entity can reawaken his actual dormant love for God. It is very natural for the tiny to be attracted to the great. That's there in every sphere of life. Something which is very, very tiny is automatically attracted to something great. So the living entity, because he is very, very tiny, very insignificant, therefore he's automatically attracted to something wonderful and great. Just like everyone, no matter what stage or sphere of life or what position in life, they're always attracted to the cosmos. As soon as something happens in the cosmos, immediately front page, Time magazine, Newsweek magazine, isn't it? There's always something which is attracts, which fascinates, which is very intriguing about the cosmos, because the cosmos is unlimited. Is unlimited. So the limited is always attracted by the unlimited. That's the very nature. We are very, very limited, very, very tiny. So our attraction is always towards something greater. This is natural attraction. Just like I was saying earlier, that we're always attracted to hear about something extraordinary, not ordinary, extraordinary. So therefore, these pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are extraordinary. But there's a complication. When something is extraordinary, it requires extraordinary ability. Therefore, Krishna says, Mahatma. The Mahatma. What is that? The Mahatma is the great soul. Mahatma means great. Maha. Maha means great. It's like the Mahatattva. Mahatattva means the great tattva. Maha. So, Mahatma. The Mahatma, they are the great souls. Now, what is the meaning of Mahatma? It means one who is very broad. Not narrow. Something which is very narrow. That is not, that is Duratma. So these two things are there in this world. There is Mahatmas and Duratmas. Duratmas means those whose mind is very limited, very, very narrow. Just like when something is narrow, you can't get anything through it, isn't it? If you have a very narrow, suppose the door is only that wide. Nothing can come through, especially not him, isn't it? So you need something broad in order for the thing to come through. So when hearing Vedic literatures, one must have broad-minded approach. Don't try and hear it through your very tiny, limited conceptions of the material world, based upon your study of physics, or the laws of this, or the laws of that, or even by arithmetic, or whatever. These are all measurements. In the material world, everything is limited by different degrees of measurement. So we try to measure everything to see if it fits. So this is called relative measurement. So we have a tendency to measure Krishna's pastimes to see if they fit. And if they can't fit in here, then we have difficulty with it. We become doubtful and reject. Doubt is a function of intelligence. But when you doubt something which is true, then that's misuse of doubt. The whole function of intelligence is to discriminate between matter and spirit. So, therefore, this Mahatma means broad-minded. Now, broad-minded doesn't mean that one's a fool. What it means is that one has to have the intelligence, the capacity to accommodate hearing about the Supreme Personality of God. And generally speaking, people's minds, they're duratma, very narrow-minded. Narrow-minded also means very much absorbed in the bodily concept of life. The one who's too much absorbed in the bodily concept of life, he's also not very attracted to Krishna's pastimes. So we see that generally we are not very attracted, both from the fact that we have not got a very broad mind, and also we are too much absorbed in the bodily concept of life. Therefore, we'd much rather hear about ourselves. We'd much rather speak about ourselves. We'd much rather hear people glorify us. If there's congregation to glorify us, we will be very eager to hear what they produce in that congregation. In that assembly, we will be very eager. What was said about me? What did they say? Isn't it? Suppose you knew that 20 people were talking about you. Your head would be simply on fire. Your ears would be burning. What did they say? What did they say? Boom! Did he say that about me? Well, I always knew he was very intelligent. Very intelligent. Very observant. I always knew that about him. Actually, he's a really nice guy. Oh, she said that? Oh, she's simply a witch. I always knew not to trust her. So that way we make our friendships and enemies in the material world. Those who speak nice things about us, they are our friends. Those who think bad things, they are our enemies. Those who have not sufficiently glorified us, they're not very advanced. They're not very advanced. They need to chant more rounds. They need to become more advanced so that they can sufficiently speak about us, or they can realize our glory. This is the way the mind thinks in the material world. So this is the nature in the living entity. But in the same thing, that is there in God. God also is very attracted by His devotees when they glorify Him. Why? When they glorify Him out of pure love. It is not so much the speaking. It is the love which Krishna is attracted to. That the devotees, they are always, satatam kitayantamam. They are always, satat. They are always chanting my glories. Krishna says, endeavoring with great determination and faith. They worship me in devotion. So that worship of Krishna and devotion is that actually a devotee is very, very eager. Very eager to glorify. Therefore, when Maitreya was speaking with Vidura, they were both exchanging different ecstasies. This ecstasy of love of God is not attainable by materialistic minds. So therefore, the Bhagavatam cannot be entered into unless one is sufficiently purified at heart. One has to purify his heart. It is not a mundane thing that you can use some adjustment. You can make some material adjustment to accommodate the Bhagavatam. Similarly, in order for us to accommodate the transcendental chanting of the holy name, we also have to make an adjustment of heart. Otherwise, there's no attraction. It's just a mundane, you're just speaking alphabet, repeating some alphabetic combination. So in the beginning, that may be there. So therefore, one may ask, then how do I sufficiently develop a love for Krishna? Because the means and the end are both the same. It is an absolute system. So therefore, if you constantly, satatam, if you're constantly chanting the glories of Krishna, if you're constantly eager to chant the holy name, eager to chant Krishna's, to hear Krishna's pastimes, then you will develop some ruchi, then you will develop some taste. In the beginning, you will develop some shraddha, faith. From shraddha, when the faith becomes very strong, then ruchi, taste comes. So that faith is important in the beginning. One has to develop faith. And the only way you can develop faith is by hearing. Unless you hear, how can you develop faith? Because the only way that you can bring in something transcendental is through sound. By sound. Therefore, you have to constantly, that's the word, why the word is given constantly, by constantly hearing and chanting. Constantly. Without stop. Then, gradually, faith develops. Otherwise, if there's not enough faith, then there will be no attraction. Because by nature, the mind accepts and rejects according to the determination of the intelligence. So if the intelligence is not fixed up, then there won't be the determination. Isn't it? There won't be the determination. The mind will say, oh, I don't want to read that. Oh, newspaper. Let me read that. Let me find out who's doing what in the material world. I mean, so, or television. People like to watch television, listen to the news, read the newspaper. There's some, or gossip, sit around, idle chat. We can talk so much. When a few mouths get together, there's no limit to the amount of talking that goes on, isn't it? And everyone's trying to impress each other about extraordinary activities. Everyone's trying to explain their extraordinary thing, which are very important to them. They think, oh, let me tell you something extraordinary that happened to me. Let me tell you something which I did, which was extraordinary. I was out on the street today, I sold an extraordinary book. I did 10 books. Yesterday I only did 5, today I did 10. Really, that's really great. How did you manage to do it all? Oh, I don't know. Krishna empowered me. So we like to hear extraordinary. And if we do anything extraordinary, the whole world has to know. So, but there, Krishna's extraordinary pastimes, no attraction. Or mythological. Oh, I don't know, these things are too difficult for me to accommodate. I can't accommodate it. It just boggles my mind. It gives me a headache. How can they cope with all that? Too much. So therefore we reject. So therefore, that is why one has to develop a very serious aptitude for hearing and reading and chanting about the transcendental past and the world. One must approach it very, very scientifically. These are not stories that were made up in the cranium of Vyasadeva or in his brain. Or these are not stories that were compiled in order to fascinate or tantalize the minds of mundane scholars or men. These are actually transcendental lila. These are transcendental pastimes of God. And the more one hears, the more one develops unadulterated love for Krishna. So one has, if one wants to develop love for Krishna, he has to develop a taste for hearing his pastimes. Otherwise that love is simply sentimental. Sentiment is something from the mental. It's a mental sentiment which will not last. It will not last because you have to worship God with your intelligence. First thing you must do is buddhi yoga, the dhammi buddhi yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. It is a science, the science of intelligence, buddhi. It is not a sentimental storybook or some sort of nice little things that we can simply entertain ourselves. But we serve God through our intelligence. That intelligence must be gotten by constantly chanting and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so many shastras, so many literature. That way we can actually develop our intelligence. Otherwise we can be swept away at one moment by the mind. If intelligence is not strong, we're finished. One doubt, and it's all over. Because doubt means lack of intelligence. If we are doubting this Krishna consciousness because we are lacking in our intelligence. Just like one time they asked Prabhupada, why do devotees leave? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna consciousness requires that extra bit of intelligence. And if you do not have that extra bit of intelligence, then you cannot maintain. You cannot maintain Krishna consciousness simply on some speculative mental adjustments. Because one day you will run out of adjustments. You understand? You can adjust your mind one way, the other way, the other way, the other way. But unless it's based on actual intelligence, which is beyond the mind, stronger than the mind is controlled by intelligence. Intelligence can only be strengthened by knowledge. It requires knowledge. It requires vijnana, jnanam vijnana. Realization of this transcendental philosophy. So that's why the first 9 cantos are to bring you to the point of self-realization. 10th canto means liberated platform. So we should study these philosophy very, very scrutinizingly. Prabhupada said threadbare. We should threadbare each verse over and over, inside out, upside down. Look at it from all angles. See, is this true or is it not true? If it's not true, don't waste your time. If you think it's not true, go away. Don't waste your time. If it is true, then it requires some immediate action, isn't it? If something is true, we have to act on it. There's no good having truth if you don't act on it. So therefore, truth requires action. Because the truth is distinguishing it from illusion. Isn't it? Finding truth means to take it away from illusion. Just like if you want to get out of darkness, you have to put the light on, isn't it? If you don't put the light on, you don't get out of the darkness. Two things. You either put the light on or the sun comes up. One way or other, the result has to be that darkness is eradicated. We have to eradicate our own darkness. It's not that someone's going to come up and hit us with a magic wand on the head and it's all over. Devotional service, you don't trip into it. You don't fall into it. You have to make it happen. Otherwise, you're finished. Again, back down into the animal species. Again, back down into the lower states of consciousness. It's a very serious consideration. not a game. We've spent billions and billions of lifetimes just like a cork in the ocean, bumping up and down, sometimes going down, sometimes going up. So here is an opportunity at last, somehow by the grace of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, we've come in touch with transcendental sound. Now if we don't capture it, then we're the most misfortunate, most unfortunate. Unfortunate as I am, Lord Chaitanya says. Unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. So we don't know how long we remain in this miserable body. We don't know how long we'll even be associating with these shastras. We don't even know how long we're going to be breathing. So therefore, better to take this opportunity and take very seriously these transcendental literatures. Otherwise, if we approach it as a sentimental, then we'll be sometimes in favor, sometimes out of favor. There will be no, obviously, Atmika Buddha, aka Purumanda. So those who are fixed in this transcendental knowledge, their intelligence is one. But those who are in the material consciousness, there is no resolution. There is so much, their intelligence is ever resolved. But those who are too much attached to the material sense gratification, the resolute determination of devotional service does not take place. The resolve, the determination. That determination is to surrender to this transcendental sound, to surrender to the holy name, to surrender to the Srimad Bhagavatam, to surrender to the Bhagavad Gita. That is the meaning of surrender. It's not a surrender just putting on dhoti and tilak. That's not how eating lots of maha. It's a determination to surrender 100%. So therefore, if you don't study the scriptures, how will you know what you're surrendering to? You're not even giving yourself a choice. You don't even know what you are surrendering to, isn't it? So some people say, oh, I lost faith. Faith in what? You understand my point? Faith in what? Something you didn't even know what you should have faith in. If you don't study the shastras, then how can you know what you should have faith in? Well, speaking of having faith, you don't even know what you should have faith in. So that's why we suffer, because we don't even know what it is we should believe in, because we haven't even taken that step of entering into the transcendental nature of Vedic literature. So there are so many shastras to be studied that he probably said even if you spent all your lifetime without doing anything else, you would not get through all the Vedic literatures in this lifetime. That's why Srila Vyasadeva, out of his unlimited compassion, put the whole Vedas into the Srimad Bhagavatam. The entire Vedic, this is the supplementary study of Vedic literature. It's the commentary. Just like if you've been watching something for a very long time, you give a commentary, isn't it? The essence. So this is the essence of Vedic knowledge. And even that we don't study. For the speak of studying all the Vedas, we don't even study the essence. Okay, is there any questions at all?
In the beginning, people don't even know what was the service. This is the, you know, in the beginning, those people meet someone who's like, that person gives them faith. So just by meeting them, they get some faith. This is something, you know, extraordinary. And then they, like you said, in the verse, should request the mystery of the service. So then, one starts to go to devotional service, what's the real business? What is the real business? Because you're, like, obviously, explaining today about how to study the books. Like, how does the, and how important is the actual, general service then also? Is it our real business to read the books? You know, we're just doing some service. Or is that also the real business?
There are nine process of devotional service. The whole business of devotional service is to satisfy the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the function of why we engage in devotional service. So how do we know what is satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because we take instruction from this pure devotee. This pure devotee comes, his devotees come, Guru Shastra Sarav, to teach us what is pleasing to the Supreme Personality of God. We are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Our business is to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is no other business in life than to be the futtas at the feet of the servants of Mahaprabhu. So there is no vagueness about what is our service. At the same time, in order to serve Mahaprabhu, we must be acquainted with Mahaprabhu. In order to serve Krishna, you have to be acquainted with Krishna. Otherwise, your service will not be very fixed. You can't simply serve out of sentiment. There has to be realization. So therefore, in the beginning, that sentiment is there. But that has to be transformed into Shraddha. So this faith is there. And then from that faith, there has to be ruchi. Without ruchi, there's no advancement. Without ruchi. Ruchi means taste. Everything is based on taste. Just like if I give you some sweet rice with sand in it, the activity will not go on. Eating activity will not last very long. After a couple of mouthfuls, we'll spit it all out. Understand? But the taste, if the taste is mixed up, then the activity will not be strong. So similarly with devotional service, if the taste is mixed up, the activity will not be very strong. If your devotional service is mixed up with fruit of intention, or mental speculation, dry speculation, as it says here, or if there's some desire for anything, whatever it is, prestige, adoration, glorification, monetary gain, whatever, then the service cannot be very fixed up. So therefore, we study Vedic literature, we study Krishna consciousness so as that we can become fixed up in our service. But the main object is we have to render service. That's why we call it devotional service, because without devotional service, without the service, without being engaged in Krishna service, we can't express our love. The gopis express their love through service. The whole spiritual world is an expression of service, dedication. So matter becomes transformed by dedication. By dedicating matter in the service of God, we can transform matter, spiritualize it. If we don't dedicate it, it will dedicate us. You're fighting against an insurmountable enemy. So if you're not dedicated to using matter in the service of Krishna, Maya is very dedicated that you should use matter in her service. So therefore, one should also be engaged. It's not that one can sit idle just because you've read the books and sit idle. We're not aiming at the platform of idleness or laziness. Devotional service is very dynamic. It's a dynamic process. Dynamic means that we should be using our senses. Rishikesha, kesha, seva. We should be using our kesha, our senses, in the service of Rishikesha, the master of the senses. So devotional service is practical in every sense. There are 9 processes. We can constantly use our, just like archanam, by worshipping the deity, shravanam, by hearing, kirtanam, by speaking, by preaching, by lecturing, by doing harinam. We can then smaranam, remembering. So in that way, there are so many different activities. And Kali Yuga is not very good to be idle. The idle mind is devil's workshop. And when you pick up a book, you fall asleep. Most of the time. Isn't it? Sleeping. So one has to be energetically engaged in Krishna's service out of love. And then by that service, one will become purified. But in order to maintain that service strongly, one has to be convinced. Otherwise one can't serve. It will become tasteless. It will become a burden. Just like if you're serving the deity without being fixed in, then it becomes a burden. Troublesome. Because there's no love. So the level of service is also dependent on the level of realization. It is not just service as in an impersonal way. It's different levels of realization. So to that degree, the service is on different levels. It may be the same person seems to be doing the same thing, but there's a vast difference between a pujari of pure love for Krishna and someone who's just doing it as a sort of hackneyed occupation, just something hackneyed. Ringing bell. So the difference is the dedication.